to our special E3 2013 series of NLSC podcasts. This is covering day one, since yesterday was day zero. If we can have such a thing as day zero, but that's what we called it anyway, because we are that awesome. And I am Andrew, joined by Leftos.
Hello, everyone.
And Ben, also known as Arcane.
Hello.
So, we've had another day of E3 in the books, and this may be a shorter episode than yesterday. In fact, pretty much guaranteed, and I know we've thrown out that guarantee before, but this one you can take to the bank, unlike our predictions for everything else over the past almost 12 months of doing this podcast now. But not quite as eventful today, but we do have a few things to talk about, wouldn't you say, gentlemen?
Yeah, we do.
As long as we handle our panel a little bit better than the NBA on ESPN crew, Bill Simmons just jumping in at every opportunity. I just, although it is kind of funny to see just Jalen Rose look at him and just think, you know, when I just want to punch you when we get off air. But, it's perhaps the most intriguing subplot to the NBA finals, which we might touch on a little bit later. But let's start off with the video game, shall we?
Okay.
Yep.
So,
who cares about basketball anyway?
Well, unless it's virtual players and we can change the shoes.
You know, yeah, of course.
As we've said before.
Wake up, Andrew.
Yeah. Well, we don't have a lot of news about the basketball games today, so not a lot to run down there. There are actually a couple of media outlets, including Cleveland.com, and not exactly sure the publication there, but I'm just going to call it Cleveland.com, and Slam Magazine are flat out reporting that Kyrie Irving has been revealed as the cover player for NBA Live 14, which may come as a surprise to EA Sports, who haven't actually officially announced it yet or revealed the cover.
but
it seems to be becoming the world's worst-kept secret. But it hasn't actually been made official, but it seems to be all but. And the game itself has been on the floor at E3, and a few people have been posting impressions. Pastor Padre from PastorPadre.com, of course, and Steve from over at Operation Sports both had a chance to try the game. Just practice mode, which I guess will raise a few eyebrows. But for what it's worth, they did say that it was encouraging and promising, and both seemed to enjoy the dribbling controls. So I guess we'll see some more impressions coming out in the over the next couple of days as people get their hands on it. But Pastor Padre did mention that they were shutting down people who were recording video. He got a couple of Madden NFL 25 before they said, please put away the cameras. So,
yeah, and they were only allowing any kind of photos or video, even for a while, you know, only on the current gen games.
On current gen
games,
yeah,
were
so,
completely so see, behind closed doors, no cameras whatsoever.
If we see any videos, they'll probably be few and far between and taken down rather quickly, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But nevertheless,
and current gen.
So,
Can I ask, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it, like, well, I'll give my thoughts after, but what are your thoughts so far on that at this stage?
NBA Live or shutting down?
The shutting down, making sure that no one films it at this stage.
I guess it's fair enough. They everyone wants to control what's shown, and they don't want things taken out of context if it's pre-alpha or whatever. But I mean, you go to an event, a venue, they've all got rules regarding what kind of pictures or film you can take, so, or video, I should say, rather than film. But, yeah, I guess it's fair enough. I mean, it's unfortunate for us as gamers who'd love to get a sneak peek, but, you know, rules are rules, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess that now it's kind of common practice, and I kind of see the point in the way that when you have other people playing your game, under, you know, and you can't control what they're doing, maybe they're bringing out things that you're not ready to show yet, or maybe they'll be bringing out bugs that you fixed, but just wearing the build that, you know, you had ready for E3.
That's
so
right.
They want, when they want to show something to the public and not just behind closed doors, and they want to make it, you know, get on YouTube and Facebook and all this kind of stuff, they want it to be something they can control and really show off what the game is going to be at its best, not when some random person that got an E3 pass is playing and maybe, you know, doing their best to embarrass the engine, maybe trying to break it, being a QA representative without being paid, you know?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I would imagine a lot of people, given, you know, the doubt surrounding EA right now, would be trying to not only get a feel for the controls, because you're going to get that sooner or later, but maybe trying to get something juicy to post on their websites and stuff like that. Maybe, you know, I did this and the game broke or stuff or something like that. And if they had it on video, it's definitely something that, you know, any company, not just EA, wouldn't want to get out. And leaks before you're ready didn't, you know, don't serve anybody well. And you can see that. You can see how that went last year when that gameplay video was leaked and it got pretty much taken down from anywhere EA could take it down from. So even though I understand when people are saying, why are they not showing, you know, pure gameplay yet? Why can't we see 5-on-5 yet? Why just practice? I can see where EA is coming from, and I was saying it when we were doing even before NBA Live 13 was canceled, when we were discussing when should NBA Live come out. So not just the game, but information itself feels has to come out when EA is ready to impress. That's the proper strategy for the company, and I'm not just saying it for EA. I'm saying it for any company. Now that's pretty much a given. They should be coming out when they feel they should come out, because they can't they really don't want to handle another leak or stuff coming out before it's supposed to. And people have to remember, we're not talking about games that are just 4 months before they're coming out. And not just 4 months, because we're talking about something like comparing October 1st to late November, apparently, for the release of the next generation consoles. Sony didn't announce a release date for PlayStation 4, so there is a bit more of development time to be had there.
Yeah.
So let EA show whatever they want to show when they're ready to show it. That's, you know, that's just my opinion.
Yep. No worries.
Yeah.
Ben?
Yep. Okay. I think I see it as a smart move in a PR sense, because, I mean, there'll be some negative taken away from it, but overall, it is sort of protecting a product at such an early stage, and we saw the situation of last year or year before, last year with the leaked video and stuff like that, so, and how possibly over-criticized it was for such an early build. So, yeah, I see it as trying to make sure there's not that mistake of the past, in a sense. But yeah, I mean, we all want to see it early. There's no doubt. We want to see where it's at. The game's been out of circulation for such a long time, and the fact that the trailer was CG, I'll bring that point up again. So we never got to really see how the game will really visually look in some way. So
we haven't seen the game itself yet, really.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that eagerness and all that from the community and the fans and just people in general, because they know about the situations of the past few years, and some are reveling in it, some are more just hoping and wanting to see a good product come back to the shelves. So I'm glad they made the decision in a lot of ways, in such an early build case at this stage, there would be a lot of little issues in that in under the code and all that stuff at the moment that they need to clean up.
Yeah.
So, good way to avoid the early PR disasters if there's leaked footage, and just because someone or the AI does a play that looks bad, it won't get criticized by millions of people as such, and that forces, you know, that negative rain of terror, I suppose, from the community, and it makes EA potentially second guess themselves if they're going to release a product or not, even at such an early stage. So,
and like you said, Lefthos, the user input as well. If the user is trying to play the game in a way that makes it look embarrassing. Like, oh, look, I'm constantly dribbling off my foot. Oh, I can't control it at all as I wiggle the stick around ridiculously. And
Will the users play it? Well, not because of that. They might not have the greatest understanding of a basketball simulation game or anything like that. They might more used to be a shooter or a football game or something like that.
Yeah.
Or someone could admittedly just be playing to troll, I suppose. We'll put it in that sense where they might purposely go out to make the game look bad and just for trolling purposes. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a possibility.
Yeah, it just takes the right person to have the controller and the right person to be handling the camera to, you know, just have it, have an embarrassing video then put up on YouTube. And you don't want that. And people are expecting a lot from EA, but I think that's because of the past 3 years. Because nobody's complaining that, oh, you know, EA just has a practice mode with Kyrie Irving, but then 2K doesn't have anything at E3 other than, you know, a presence with the bureau is, you know, promoted all over the floor, and it's going to show up in live streams from for various media outlets and for, you know, console companies and the like. But it just has its people running the floor, but there's no booth, no way to test NBA 2K14 in practice mode or whatever. So, and you have to remember, it's still June. We're talking about games that are going to come late.
We'll say November, December.
Late November. What?
Well, holiday season. That's what Sony has said.
Holiday season.
So, we'll just say November, December-ish.
Yeah, November, December, we're still 5 to 6 months away from the games coming out, which if we were talking about October, it would be like expecting to have people be able to grab a controller and play in April.
Yeah.
And that's never going to happen. So the fact that EA allows people to grab a controller and have some practice with Kyrie Irving and experience Bounce Deck and, you know, use the modifiers to check out his signature dribbles and signature shots or whatever, you know, says that EA is trying to push a more positive agenda than other years. And that's what I got from both Pasta Padre's comments and from Steve Noah at Operation Sports. They're both saying that there's a more positive vibe compared to other years, that the jury is still out since, you know, it's still too few things, but they're allowing people to get some substance out of trying even some minute part of the game so early, before the actual release of the game.
Yeah.
So EA is making small but right moves, and even after I saw people be disappointed after, you know, the trailer was CGI, I'm seeing a more positive response, you know, to what Pasta Padre is saying and Steve Noah is saying as to, you know, EA allowing people to grab a controller so early.
It seems that there's promise and intrigue rather than disappointment and distrust.
And I'll put it this way. I'm not trying to troll or anything, but I suppose the positive things that Pasta Padre has said has been good, considering how negative he's probably been the last few years. I'll put it in that way.
Yeah.
He pulls no punches when it comes to EA or NBA Live. Yeah. And certainly, you know, perhaps less inclined. I mean, we try to be unbiased, of course, but we are traditionally an NBA Live fan site. So maybe in the past we've been more forgiving or understanding towards EA, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. When you see something positive, I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. You know, I have been following Pasta Padre's website, and I wasn't expecting him to come out, you know, positive. So I guess, you know, for EA to win someone like that back, even with a practice demo, means that there are positives in the horizon for NBA Live, which is, you know, good news to even me, because I am going to love this next cycle of basketball video games and the competition that's going to be there. And it's good news for gamers, you know, and that's what this podcast is for.
Yeah. So I guess that's pretty much all the basketball video game news we have then, since...
That's not all.
I'll let you go, sir.
Okay, from what I understand, we now know that both titles are going to be launch titles. GameSpot is apparently offering a bundle, as we said yesterday, with PlayStation 4 and NBA Live 14. And I don't remember where I saw that, but I think 2K has confirmed now that that NBA 2K14 will be day and date launch titles for both next generation consoles.
Okay, there you go.
So there you go. You're going to be able to get your next gen, you know, dose of basketball gaming the day the consoles release, if you're one of the lucky ones, or you know, one of the impatient ones to get a console on day one. As always, we're going to, you know, if you want us to put you in chains in order to prevent you from buying from eBay for $5,000, we will provide these services for a modest price.
$5,000?
And, $4,999. Yeah, 999.99. You're going to be saving one cent, and not buying the console after all.
There's a Professor Farnsworth moment if I have never heard one right
there. Yeah.
I know it's a rip-off, but I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And a nice tidbit coming out of yesterday's Community 2K live stream presented by Chris Manning, and I forget who the other person from 2K was, but Chris Manning said that 2K had already hosted a community day for WWE 2K14, which I know, I think, Andrew, you're excited for. And
I get it every year, yeah, so...
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how the transition to, you know, to 2K fares. You know, for the series, if it's going to be.
Well, Dukes is still developing it, so they've got a lot of the old developers there. So it's mostly a publishing thing, I believe. But but even so, I mean, still interesting to see how it turns out and whether 2K's influence. Turns out. I mean, people keep saying, PC version.
My wrestler, that just Ming put as a comment on the thread, pretty much sums it up.
Well, see, that's where you need the closet, you see, because that's where you need outlandish costumes, world professional wrestling, so.
WWE 2K13 already allowed you pretty much good customizability. I've seen a few Let's Plays of that, especially the one on Rooster Teeth's channel is pretty much hilarious because they went all out in creating alien-looking people and, you know, the most ridiculous characters they could think of.
Yeah,
it's already pretty hilarious. But I'm interested in seeing, you know, if the series transition into 2K means the game, you know, goes a bit more serious, or if 2K will keep some of that ridiculousness, just, you know, because it's wrestling. I don't know how else to put it. And it's entertainment wrestling. That's
real wrestling, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry to break the illusion for anyone who may not be in the know.
Santa Claus still exists, by all means. You know, Santa Claus is
still... I'm afraid that there's no Santa Claus, but wrestling is real. You know, that's the big twist.
And you can, of course, use hypnotism to win your opponent, according to Shadow Green Signature. But you know, the more interesting tidbit for people looking for basketball news is Chris Manning. Said LD2K, for anyone, you know, who doesn't know who Chris Manning is, LD2K said that he's going to try and put together an NBA 2K community day soon, you know, and bring 5 to 10 of the game's best fans to 2K to play the game and give some feedback to the developers. So, you know, that happened last year for the first time. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if and when it happens and which people get picked and what the feedback is that comes out of that, because we got some good feedback last year. And I remember that I wasn't willing to give 2K any chances after being so frustrated with 2K12. I wasn't expecting 2K13 to be, you know, I wasn't giving them a chance by criticizing all of the time and hoping that things would be there and then being pissed off that association was the same. But it turned out to be a good game and we got some pretty good feedback out of the community day, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing if you know, the Community Day happens and when does it happen. And if, you know, here's hoping I'm already there when it happens so I get to meet all of these great people from the community up close and personal and get some, you know, fresh ideas on what to work on and how to work on it.
And tell them to support the NLSC, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be wearing an NLSC shirt at the Community Day. If, you know, there's no dress code that says you have to wear it. I'm a 2K seal shirt. I'm a lazy 2K dev.
I own no other t-shirts.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, if I can wear an NLSC shirt, I'm going to be wearing it proudly. That much.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have started talking to that supplier in regards to getting some stuff made up. So I've made communication with that other supplier that I was hoping to. I'll spend more time talking to them next week and try and at least get some stuff made up as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
okay.
That way you can wear one of those shirts when you do work for 2K.
It'll be like a real life My Closet.
Yes.
Yeah. HD videos opening the closet and trying to decide which NLSC shirt to wear today.
I'll do one for, like, you know how in the actual game how it has on court, off court, and sort of like the presser sort
Black
of
top,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you have your one is when he wakes up, so the pajamas in work and at the end of the day kind of thing. I don't know. Something along the lines of that, I guess.
Yeah.
And by the end of the day, your hair will be like all crazy and wild.
I remember that I still haven't talked about, you know, the trip to the US in detail in my interview with 2K Sports. So that's one thing to, you know, keep in mind when for future podcasts. I really have some stories I'd love to share with, you know, the rest of the folks. Listen to the podcast. And apparently, from what you were telling us, Andrew, before the podcast started, we got pretty much a lot of you interested in our first day zero recap or part one of the E3 recaps, whatever you want to call it, you know, for the first episode.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of you guys tuned in and maybe some girls as well. You know, we welcome everyone here, anyone who wants to listen to our dog and pony show. So, yes, thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the first in the series and that this one will also live up to your expectations and the remaining series this week as we find things to talk about. Perhaps not all basketball talk. Is there anything else this week on the – or today, rather, from on the basketball front?
There is.
Well, I wanted to sort of discuss those things I was hoping to just before we totally change
the
subject.
Okay, yep. Sure. Just one last thing before you begin, Ben. What I wanted to mention as far as, you know, the podcast goes and everything we've done so far, you know, it's really exciting to have so many people tune in every week. We see that, you know, there's always a couple of thousand users tuning in each week.
At least.
So it's really nice to have so many people listening. And we, of course, have said it a number of times, you know, feel free to give us your feedback, you know, just mention, you know, even as a tweet and stuff like that. Give us a bit of feedback. Give us what you'd like to listen what you'd like us to talk about. And another thing I wanted to mention is that I was kind of sad not to see the podcast propagate through, you know, Android applications as well. But recently I rechecked my favorite Android podcast application, which is Pocket Cast. And if you look for our podcast, it is there. It is on their directory. So if you're on Android and you're looking to subscribe to the NLSC podcast and get it on your mobile phone as soon as it's released, I'm guessing, you know, I know for sure Pocket Cast's directory has us. So you may look us up as NLSC. And if other apps have the NLSC podcast in their directories and, you know, you want to mention it and for us to mention them so you can, people can subscribe, Android users can subscribe, you know, feel free to mention them. And Windows phone apps. But I doubt, does any one of us have a Windows phone?
Android.
I mean, I,
yeah,
a couple
I got
of friends.
Android phone. But I do have a Windows Surface tablet, so I might still be able to access.
You do?
Yeah.
I had no idea you had gotten a Surface.
Yeah, I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. The
thing I said I liked about it was it had similar architecture to a sort of PC, obviously with the Word and Office and all that stuff. So I saw it as a good work tool in that sense, instead of having to carry a laptop around. So that was the thing that I liked about it. So.
Well, if you want to go back and listen to that episode, or indeed any of our other fantastic episodes, all one needs to do is go to nba-live.com and click on podcast. Look at that. Yeah. Seamless.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're not above advertising.
Shamelessly putting ourselves on.
Yes, exactly.
No media, yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of which, listen to episode 29.
Yes.
The interesting thing is, I'm sorry to segue into this a bit, but I'm seeing some of my friends transition to Windows Phone curiously. I mean, I was expecting Android phones because they're cheaper than iPhones, and then those of them that had money to go for an iPhone straight away, but I'm seeing Windows Phone pop up, in the hands of various of my friends, and I wasn't expecting that, and Microsoft has... it gets a lot of criticism about its Windows 8, user interface, but it makes for a seamless transition to its mobiles and tablets. So I guess for people that are both using Windows 8 and have a Windows Phone or, a Surface tablet, I would have to imagine that, with the syncing features that are in, it makes for a seamless experience, and I guess that's a good thing. And it's curious to see, I don't know if you guys noticed, but Apple had its press conference at the same time that Microsoft were having there. And Apple, of course, isn't participating in E3. They were at WWDC 2013. And during their press conference, they introduced version 7 of iOS, which apparently is a lot flatter. There were some, some changes in the Apple personnel and in the designers, and Apple has gone for a much flatter look that is now supposed to be, most media outlets that I've been reading compare it directly to Windows Phone and how flat Windows Phone looks, and I don't know. There's mixed responses about that, but I guess phones, mobile OS seem to transition into one another. We see stuff being copied all the time and people are complaining, but if it's a useful feature, why not have it on pretty much every OS? Would you rather, transition to another company that has another different OS and miss out on so many good features just because they didn't copy them?
And
so
I've seen that argument made before, from web browsers to video games, and especially since in our community we do look at two different competing video games.
Yeah.
The idea that, such and such had this first. Oh, you stole that. Oh, that was in this. Who cares if it's a good idea?
Yeah, yeah.
Adopt it, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the way I see it as well. I have to agree. But anyway, I segued into a completely different subject, and Ben wanted to talk about some basketball-related gaming things that he couldn't get through yesterday. So I'm going to shut up and let him speak.
Yay. Finally, my time to shine. I mean...
Don't ruin it!
Pressure's on. This determines whether I get more speaking time in future podcasts.
It's more minutes there, please.
Yeah. It's like, sub me in, coach.
We'll replace you with the DJ 3000. Don't praise the machine.
Why is he called 3000?
Not him, the Simpsons, where they had the...
Okay. Yeah. Don't they call DeAndre Jordan DeAndre 3000?
Possibly. I have no. Isn't there a rapper?
I think the guy
that's Andre 3000 from Outkast.
So it's a reference to him.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
I sort of wanted to give a bit more praise yesterday than I did with regards to 2K's LeBron trailer, and like I was probably a little bit critical of it, but I've had another look, and because I'm not so as fatigued as I was yesterday after being up for what ended up to be about 37 hours, I think it was 37 and a half hours. So the ad was shot, or the trailer was shot, it had very much a Nike basketball commercial feel to it, like the way of the lighting set up. So it very much had that sort of art style to it, and the player models were vastly improved for sure. Obviously, it was going to be next gen, so yes. But I wanted to give him praise on that. Aside from one or two sort of facial gestures, everything looked really polished in that sense, and very clean. And yeah, I saw a definite graphical improvement that was getting to expectation of what a basketball game should really start to look like this generation, especially at this early stage in the new console. I think so. I want to give him praise for that.
Can I tell you just for a second the most obvious argument that I was expecting to pop up and it did pop up? The most expected conspiracy theory about this?
Yep.
2K dropped the graphic quality in 2K13 just so their next-gen version would look even better.
It was all
a deliberate plan.
If that is true...
It worked.
Yes. it is a risky player. I will put it at that. I mean, but in a lot of ways, the graphic fidelity and 2K the last, say, 3 to 4 years hadn't really progressed much. There was very little change, aside from a few little improvements here or there. It wasn't a great enough change over the past few years compared to Live 09, or even Live 08, Live 09 to Live 10. Like, you could see a huge graphical change in between those 3 years with those games, especially between Live 09 and Live 10. And for me, Live 10 still has probably one of the better looking visuals in an NBA basketball game in a lot of ways. I mean, not on console anyhow, I'll put it that. I was really impressed with how the player models, textures and all that stuff looked in Live 10. Was it as good as where it could go on? No, but it's still a lot better than I thought. Or it was still a lot better than it could have been in such a small time and jump. So I'll leave it at that. With the Live 14 trailer, one little sort of dig that I will put at it, I mean, it's just a small one, and it's obviously just part of a CG thing, but just the ball motion in the dribble, like just the lack of the rotation of the ball as it was dribbled, that was sort of I'm purely visual more than a post, in a way, a lot of things with the gameplay or and things like that in a lot of sense, but I'll pay more attention to that in a lot of sense. But yeah, just the small little thing is I would have probably had a bit more rotation on that ball spin. I know it's such a weird thing to talk about, but yeah.
Are you talking about the CG trailer, or are you talking the
CG trailer as he's, you know, doing even just the dribbling motion things that they had this on display on the actual press conference. So, you know,
wasn't that supposed to be like in engine?
Well,
Kyrie Irving dribbling, because they had, you know, the practice mode with Kyrie Irving available for people to play. So I would imagine that Kyrie Irving on a black background dribbling. I think they said that was in-game animations and stuff like that.
I need to double check about that, but I could be wrong, but the whole thing with even from the just a bit where they're just sort of showing Kyrie just sort of standing and dribbling.
Yeah,
I thought I knew it was using in-game animations, but I don't know if that was actually in-game.
The ball physics, you mean?
Yeah.
So maybe in-game the ball is actually spinning, but maybe you know they didn't exaggerate. They didn't put that effect, you know, exaggerated in the
CGI.
In the CGI. Maybe. I mean, it's not a criticism that's easy, you know, it's not something that's easy to notice and that you're going to ask people that got their hands on a demo to look at, you know. Yeah. Is the ball spinning while you're dribbling? So it remains to be seen, but I don't think, you know, it's a minor thing, and I think that if it didn't, like I said, it's most probably because it was somewhat predetermined.
Yeah, and it was one thing I was trying to highlight. I mean, it is such a minor thing, but because being a graphic and I'll even say I have built three games, so yes, an amateur game designer, that was sort of like a slight little pet peeve when they're trying to, you know, all this emphasis on this sort of CGI, but there was one little fatal flaw in that sense. I'll even sort of throw to the whole thing with that Titanic movie. You know, there was all this $300 million spent on it or whatever it was. And then just sort of the thing that sort of bugged me the most was when they're on the floating debris and stuff like that, and they're talking and then they're exhaling, and just the sort of the CGI on the exhaled air and that you could see because it was so cold looked really fake compared to how much everything else looked pretty real and all that stuff in the rest of the movie. So,
like the dude that fell and hit the propeller? That was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, just you know, for all that effort, for such a small thing, kind of stands out in a lot of ways. So,
well, you
do
notice these little things, but at the same time, and especially with a video game, if that ends up being the smallest complaint we have, or the biggest complaint we have, rather, then we can probably live with that. I mean, I'd even go so far as even the body models, for example, which could stand to be better, as we've discussed before. But if it turns out that the game itself plays pretty nicely, then you can kind of I for one at least can get around the little things like that, but it does stand out. I know where you're coming from. It does definitely jump out at you. And when this is the only thing we've got to go on, a trailer, that's all we've seen. I mean, what else? Yeah. What other impressions can you get? And it's right there under the microscope, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I suppose it sort of goes back to things that we've been saying, how critical and how we're trying to break things down, and you know, so that way. I mean, I have been asked to in a way to give feedback to EA, so that's one reason why I've sort of looked at it probably the way that I have, is because so that's why I've probably been picky, I suppose, in that term. So that's where I'll come from in this, and I'm ready to move on. That I think that was where I was wanting to sort of cover in that. But I am hopeful that NBA Live will come out strong. And from the impressions from Pasta and all that, and Steve from OS, it seems positive. And I hope that they can carry that on and they don't lose sight of that. And I think I'll agree with what Leftos said yesterday in regard to the hierarchy sort of thing. Probably had an effect in last year's decisions with a lot of things. So and I hope that the management side is off their backs, so that way they can just focus on and putting trust in the developers that they can actually get this game out.
Let the artists work.
yeah, you know, and I mean, in a gaming environment, even in just a general design environment. I have been looking for a studio that would put a lot of trust in their employees, give them the chance to sort of communicate with the other designers to feed off them, and because everyone will learn different things off different people because they have different techniques and stuff like that. When I've been doing a lot of working in graphic design and web design agent companies and that. I haven't found a lot of that because the employers haven't put trust in their employees as such to be able to do that. And that has sort of been a hesitation in going back into that field commercially again, because I have an environment that lets that creative energy and that feed off each other instead of treating their staff as robots in a sense. You sit down, you do this, and you do that. And this is purely your role only. You know, I mean, I've been in an industry or in a company where I was helping some new employees set up their computers because they had a certain way every morning when you logged in, and if you were on a different computer than you were the day before, kind of thing. You had to do all the setups and all that stuff, from your email to certain program setups within the design or within the program itself. So, and it sort of can take about 10-15 minutes for each person, and that. And I got in trouble helping my employees when I was sort of new. I mean, yeah, they probably should have learnt it, but you know, everyone has a different learning period and different way of learning. So I didn't mind helping out, but I did cop a lot of slack from management because of that, and so I was, again, disappointed in that sort of thing. So
yeah. It's an industry that demands both innovation and cooperation. And if that's not there, I mean, I'm saying that as an outsider. I mean, I suppose that goes for pretty much everything, but certainly technology and video games seems to be the key ingredient, innovation and cooperation. And if that's not there, then the product suffers, and we've seen examples, plain and simple.
Yeah. And in the long run, too, you'll have a better chance of keeping your staff if they're happy.
Yeah.
So instead of such high turnover rates and all that, because there's no real challenge or progression in the industry and all that stuff, that might cause people to look elsewhere as such or get frustrated in their job, so they don't spend, you know, they'll just sort of half-ass it, I suppose, and, you know, just get by and just get the paycheck sort of thing. So,
hopefully that's no longer the case.
Yes.
And it seems like they're acknowledging the mistakes of the past, so... I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
But is there anything else new or otherwise about Raspberry Games just before we move on to other E3-related goodness?
Not a lot. I'm still, you know, I'll be keeping my eye on, you know, NBA 2K and NBA Live throughout E3 to see if any news pop up, and we will be doing, you know, a couple of more shows to discuss if any news come up. But mostly it's been, you know, it's been the first day that E3 has been open to the public. We call it day one because it's the first day the exhibition floor is open.
Yeah.
Yesterday it was just press conferences. So it was interesting to see, you know, people from around the world that joined E3 to have some first impression from the demo. Some interesting interviews came up, and I have two of them in front of me. One is an interview from a Microsoft executive discussing and trying to justify Microsoft's decision around, you know, DRM.
Is this the Don Matrick interview with Jeff Keeler?
No, this is on Ars Technica. I'm trying to find the name of the person. Microsoft Xbox Chief Marketing and Strategy Officer Yusuf Mehdi. He says that they were expecting the reaction they got from their customers and from their potential customers, and he says that it is a change. They're trying to do something pretty big in moving the industry towards the digital world, and they were expecting that, you know, consumers may not have been ready for this change, but that they will adjust once they see the benefits of that. So they're trying to say that I'm just going to read off some pieces and get your opinion on that afterwards. Those digital benefits will be available at launch, but Mehdi hinted that the digital rights management transition might unlock some more interesting game access and distribution methods later on. In the future, you can imagine the capability to have different licensing models, different ways that people have to access games. This all gets unlocked because of digital. he wouldn't get drawn into details, but when I suggested ideas like all you can play Netflix for games or purely digital game rentals, he didn't shoot me down. Sure, it could be a variety of ways. He also suggested that a transition to a world of strictly downloadable and online-connected games would help allow for a diversity of business models for publishers to take advantage of, from free-to-play titles to $60 AAA games to Xbox Live Arcade games somewhere in between. As you go into the digital world, what's happening is publishers are choosing to have different business models and consumers are saying, hey, if I can't resell the title, provide me for a different way to get value to get into your game. And we think the market will be efficient in finding good models that work for consumers. In essence, Mehdi said consumer demand for good value from games will drive prices down even if a publisher decides to fully cut off the market release valve of used game resale. So what Microsoft is saying pretty much is that we've put restrictions in.
Deal with it.
to force new forms of digital distribution, to force publishers to get more value out of digital distribution. I really don't see why that couldn't happen in parallel with the current business models. Yeah. I mean, we've already said that digital downloads shouldn't be the same price as a retail game, because agreed. If you're getting it, the publisher avoids the price to have the game, you know, printed and shipped, the price of, you know, even the minute price of the manual and all the extra things that come with the disc. So I don't see why we had to, you know, force everyone into going full digital in a console, you know. From what I understand, Xbox One, you know, the discs will be worthless, will be just, you know, you just put them in your drive and maybe they just carry the data, but they won't do anything because everything will be tied to your account online.
It's like essentially a software disc or like Photoshop and that. You know, you install it, install the code, and you don't have to worry about really using it again unless you want to reinstall or put on another PC.
So forcing everything to go digital will force the publishers to come up with new ways to provide value to the customers. So because the customers will be pissed off that they can't resell the games, publishers will be forced to give them more value out of the core game. Can I just say I'm not buying it?
Yeah.
In my personal opinion, I'm not buying that at all. The only positive I see out of this, and I'm going to, I'm sorry, Andrew, I'm going to wrap up my opinion so you can get your words in. The only positive I can see out of Microsoft's model is that you can, once you set up your account, you can set 10 family members, and those 10 family members will be able to play your games, as long as you're not playing them at the same time. So, for example, if you have 10 games in your catalog, in your profile, and you have said, you know, this is me and the 9 others are members of my family, each one of your family, quote-unquote, will be able to play one of your games. So, you know, for example, you know, it's not like the Xbox One will be coming with a blood test kit to make sure that only blood relatives will be able to... You know, actual family members.
Well, that hasn't been confirmed yet, has it? I haven't ruled that out.
It has been out ruled according to Ars Technica, so no worries there. But it will be interesting to see how wide is that family concept. Will I be able to add, you know, my best friend as a family member? Will I be able to remove people as my family members?
Yeah.
Or will there need to be, you know, will these people be locked in and I'll need to go through customer support to know, oh, you know, I got a divorce, so I don't want my wife to have access to my library anymore, or the 2 children I'll have to pay, you know, it's month for. I'll have to see how this works in order to say that, okay, there's a lot of stuff that Microsoft is doing wrong, but having 10 people be able to access my game library and play games that I'm not playing right now, you know, is a good thing. There is some good value to come out of it, but still doesn't, you know, when you put that when you weigh those things one against each other, the cons outweigh the pros.
Absolutely.
But it's going to be. I'm still going to keep an eye on this family concept, this digital playing family concept for more news. Your thoughts, guys, Andrew?
Well, it's like you said. And going to also referring to the interview that Ben alluded to, which had a bit of a gem of a quote with people who want to stick with offline can keep their Xbox 360, which was almost another deal with it kind of quote from Microsoft representative to throw out there. To play devil's advocate, and we use that devil very literally, I guess. But to play devil's advocate for a moment, I can see where they're coming from and what they're trying to do, but the approach, I still disagree with it. I think it's a poor justification. The whole idea, the whole concerns about having to check in once a day, and I think they're just misunderstanding why the consumer doesn't want that. And so, well, yes, this is a gaming system and we are hardcore gamers, but we also have lives, other things that we do. We may go a day or two without turning on the console. We may go away for the weekend. So what, do we have to leave the console on over the weekend or whatever? So
unfortunately, Don Matrick was pretty clear about that. There is a part of his interview to Game Trailers yesterday, after in day one, or if it's not yesterday to you guys, but today, during day one, Don, what's his name?
I keep
forgetting.
Don Matrick.
Yeah, Don Matrick. It was interviewed by Game Trailers, and he said if people don't have consistent internet access, there is a console for them, and it's called Xbox 360.
That's the quote I was referring to, which is pretty much basically the a deal with it kind of.
It's a huge slap in the face. And he refers, to one of the comments is, I work in a nuclear submarine. How am I supposed to be able to play
an Xbox? It's the most extreme example of something. Everyone else's concern. Again, I don't want to leave the console on all the time. What if I'm going away for the weekend? What if I just get caught up with life and I don't play games for a couple of days? As much as I love games, that happens sometimes.
Yeah, it seems like the moment you boot the console, it needs to, it will see that you haven't logged in for 24 hours. It will need to sync with the servers before it allows you to play any games.
Yeah. So, no.
Which means that if the internet is down when you decide to play some games after a few days, when you get back from work, you want to relax with a few games, turn the console on to play. After 3 days of hard work, for example, the internet is down, or Microsoft servers are down, or have been hacked, or whatever, you can't play any games.
Yeah, and maybe admittedly they have a point about people referring to the worst case scenario, but you got to consider the worst case scenario.
The fact is, if Sony hadn't considered the worst case scenario and had gone the same way, it would be fair to say deal with it. You either stay on the current generation or you move on and accept the facts. But Sony caters to people without internet.
Yeah.
And it's such an obvious thing to do because we've had that for so many years. And we're cheering because we will still be able to play single player games offline.
And it's not that they're necessarily just catering to people offline. I mean, Sony's still going to have all this online content, and they're going to be doing the same things. It's just that they're not leaving something behind. And it reminds me actually of, we referred earlier to Windows 8, and the people have just not had a great reaction to it because removing something as simple as the start button. And I feel that's Microsoft is really getting myopic in this attempt to move forward by being too quick to get rid of things that people like or found useful, and to the point they're actually releasing the update to Windows 8 that has the start menu and everything. Was that coming in a couple of months or something? I should know that, but I can't remember off the top of my head at the moment. Again, it's the moving forward, I understand, and innovation is important in the industry, but when you throw out a model and features that work, and we see this, this is at a console level or at a platform level, but we've seen it in games as well. When games strip out features that are working and people like and want, and they're thrown out in the case of in the name of being new and innovative and getting something fresh by chucking out at the same time something we want and like, it's not really a step forward. And that's what's I don't buy the justification at all. I think they're being very arrogant about the situation, and it's every time they open their mouths, it's just another. The only people that are buying it are the fanboys, and I've seen some jaw-dropping, eyebrow-raising stupidity from fanboys in response to those interviews. It's don't buy it. Don't buy it.
Yeah.
Ben, any quick thoughts?
I do want to sort of stress about all the stuff. Like, it is ultimately a slap in the face. It's telling the people who are so looking forward to the next gen console and all that it's like, well, go stuff yourself. You can stick with last gen for all we care. That's essentially the insult.
Yeah.
There is an interview on IGN regarding Phil Spencer and that. I haven't actually read it yet. I've just posted it to you guys. I'll have a look at it after. But it seems like there could be some similar deal with it sort of moments in that with it. The Xbox, Microsoft and that seem to have a vision for where they want to take this. Maybe they haven't explained it well enough what their vision is and why they're implementing this. I think if they maybe explain it so that way we can understand it, we might go, okay, I see what you're trying to do. So that might bring back some leverage, but at this stage, I don't see it working, and I think they will be in trouble. I think maybe in a couple of years, if they do some changing in their code, maybe they can sort of re-catch up in some way, but I seriously think they're going to be in trouble this generation. I think the first year is, or even 2 years of this console, is going to be huge in determining its longevity. You know, I mean, look at the Wii U numbers at the moment. There's been less than 10 million sold.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
and companies are giving up on it already. Developers are giving
up. Yeah. I mean, considering that the Wii sold over 100 million units.
Yeah.
So
it's not looking... basically. I mean, even if it was thanks to the casual game, and Nintendo pretty much won that last console.
Yeah, exactly.
By the sales, if nothing else.
Yeah. So I do agree. I think Microsoft are really arrogant at this age, but I think they're not able to communicate the reasoning and why they've implemented this measures. Like, we don't see what they see in their whole vision. And I think if they explain that better, it might help them a bit more, but it probably at this stage, I don't think it's going to be enough to help them. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe in 1 or 2 years, maybe some publishers, because if the sale numbers aren't good, some publishers might go, well, we might not produce for Xbox One like they've done with the Wii U. I still reckon that could be a long shot, but it is a possibility.
You never know. If the response to the console, if it flops, you know.
Yeah.
And we've certainly seen consoles flop before. I mean, the Atari, when they tried to get into the console wars in the 90s to intersect with Super Nintendo and the Atari Jaguar, which I think marketed itself as the first 64-bit system. I think the Jaguar promoted itself as, and again, it flopped because it wasn't designed in a way that allowed people to take advantage of its the processing power. So I mean, Microsoft has done pretty well the last two generations, whether they've won or not is a matter of debate and sales, but it could happen.
The PS3 has outsold it now, and taking into account that Microsoft had that year lead. I did actually see something today that the Xbox One is delayed in Asia by 1 year in being able to be sold there in 1 year. But they haven't said anything and this is not including Japan, so this is all like China and all that.
Maybe they're waiting stuff, for, you know, good broadband internet to reach the rest of Asia, because what's the point?
Yeah,
true.
You go. Well, there's your
maybe there's Microsoft is investing, you know, besides the developer studios, it's investing into some ISPs to get some fiber going through, you know,
like
through Asia. Yeah, just to be able to sell its console. Because, well, how are you going to sell? Maybe some people would be, even some of the in some of the poorer countries, maybe some people would be putting away money to buy the console. Maybe they don't have internet, but they want, you know, their kids to. They don't have consistent internet. Maybe they're still stuck on dial-up or whatever. They want their kids to be able to enjoy games. And Microsoft pretty much said, if you're one of those people, there is a console for you. It's called Xbox 360. But why would they buy the Xbox 360 when the PlayStation 4 is coming out?
Yeah, exactly. So
I don't know. I really don't know.
It's another shoot themselves in the foot moment. Yeah. It's another shoot.
I said it yesterday. I'm going to say that again. I have no idea what Microsoft is going to do from here on out, because it doesn't seem it's given any incentive, any serious incentive to gamers to get its console. And I the numbers are going to be embarrassing. So I'm not expecting the whole cycle to go like this. I'm not expecting the next 7 years to be with a total Sony domination with PlayStation 4, Microsoft doing no moves and just expecting the Xbox One to at some point sell. Yeah. So I'm expecting a move sooner or later, and I'll be looking forward to that, to see what Microsoft does next, if it's not grabbing the gun and shooting themselves on the head other than the foot.
Before we move on, perhaps to talk about a couple of the games, because we are at the around about the 1 hour mark at the moment. Since they did bring up the idea of, you know, there's a console for you, the 360, I actually am going to be keeping my Xbox 360, because, you know, I've got a library of games for it, and I've got Xbox Live arcade games, NBA Jam.
I mean, they even introduced a new version of the 360. So
yeah. So I mean, I'll be keeping it, and I've never actually sold a console. I've got all right back to the original Nintendo. I've still got them.
In working
order. So, I mean, I will be upgrading to the new generation and a PlayStation 4 at that, barring something drastic from Microsoft, as I've said before. I'll be keeping my Xbox 360, and I was just wondering, Ben, are you going to be keeping your PlayStation 3?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
it's still a great device, and, you know, there's no reason to sell it.
Spare Blu-ray player, if nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. and, you know, I mean, the cloud gaming sort of thing, I mean, that's not going to take full effect in Australia until probably end of 2014. So yeah. I still have a reason to keep it. And plus, Sony are going to still continue releasing titles for it. So, yeah.
Well, of course, Grand Theft Auto is coming out on last gen only, so anyone who's interested in that, myself included, can't really get rid of a 360 or a PS3 just yet.
So, I'll still keep it. And, yeah, it's definitely still a good entertainment unit to keep in that. So, yeah, there's no reason for me to sell it or trade it in at this stage. I trust the games that they produce, and that's why I've stuck with PlayStation for such a long time in that. I will be definitely upgrading to the PS4 as well.
Yeah, can I just say that I was one of the people that wouldn't touch cloud gaming with a 10-meter pole, as John said, but then John actually persuaded me to try on live on my PC, and I tried the time-limited demo of NBA 2K12 on live just out of curiosity, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, my connection is terrible. It's absolutely terrible, especially as far as latency goes. It's terrible. So I was expecting it to be a lag fest, to be somewhat like the NBA 2K12 online experience on the PC, to be blunt. But it was nice. The latency wasn't as bad as I expected, and I could handle it pretty well. Well, I did try some games that required even more precision as far as, you know, latency, some racing games and first-person shooter, and those didn't work that well. But I can only imagine it will get better if I move to the States and, you know, switch to a proper internet connection with low latency. I don't know how you guys are doing in Australia as far as latency. having tried on live on my city connection, I am being much more hopeful about Gaikai on the PlayStation than I was before.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of games on the PlayStation 3 library that I want to try that I'm not going to buy a PlayStation 3 for. For example, you know, of course, The Last of Us and Heavy Rain are two that I've absolutely wanted to try out, but I'm not willing to, you know, buy a console for just games. So being able to play those on Gaikai and on a good connection makes me really positive about, you know, that experience.
Sorry, I will interrupt you on this. During the actual press conference when they were talking about the Gaikai experience. Mm-hmm. If you buy a Vita, you'll be able to play PlayStation 3 games on that.
Yeah,
so that's a possibility. That's a possibility. You know, if you didn't want to buy the actual PS3 console, you could get the Vita instead.
Mm-hmm. I'm still going to be putting my money first on the next gen console and maybe thinking about the Vita later. You know.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well. Again, because the PS4 is going to work really well with the PS Vita as a second screen option. So it just sort of tying it in, so full circle tie-in with that. And so
I know. But still, $400 is $400, and, you know, the $400 is with no games. So, you know, you're still going to want to buy a couple of games. So that gets your price point at $520. If you have friends that you want to be able to play regularly, you have to spend money on a new controller as well. So I'm not looking into, you know, the Vita just yet. I'm looking to start saving money to get the PS4, get a couple of games that I'm not going to be mentioning which they're going to be because it's going to be obvious as hell. And maybe a second controller in order to be able to have friends over. And, you know, that's going to be put me away, you know, $500 at least. So that's a pretty good sum to enter the next generation. But, I mean, I am aware of the PS Vita connectivity, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on that. And maybe the PS Vita, maybe there's going to be a good bundle later on. So, you know, I don't see myself buying the system day one. I don't know. So maybe, you know, wait until I get a good bundle with maybe the Vita and an additional controller, something like that. It's interesting, and Sony has mentioned a lot of great features. Way more great gamer related features than they had than Microsoft has to show.
Yeah,
agreed on that.
Well, speaking of the games, probably as I said, we are over the hour mark now, so probably best if we just wrap up with a few thoughts on the games that have been shown and the latest exhibits. But before we do, before we do, I actually saw a comment in the forum from Soru today that he said. And this goes back to exclusives, and so there isn't really an exclusive for either the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4 that have swayed my opinion. And I agree. I don't play that many exclusives, if any. So, in fact, I think all the games I'm most interested in are actually non-exclusive. So that's neither here nor there for me. But the one that he mentioned that made me think, said, is coming from a console that he's not actually interested in getting, which is the new Zelda game on Wii U. And it actually had me think, because I was a Nintendo fanboy growing up, as I've mentioned a couple of times before on the podcast, and really am a fan of the Zelda series, but haven't played one since Majora's Mask, which is 2000, so we're looking at a few generations back. And by going to first Sony with the PS2 and then Microsoft with the 360 most recently, I've actually not been able to play that because it's a first-party IP and doesn't appear on any other consoles, obviously. So, and I guess that's really the only exclusive that I'd be interested in. And it's funny because we have talked before about what Nintendo is going to do with the Wii U being a flop and whether their first-party IP like Mario and Zelda would actually carry the console. Oh, well, the latter too, and that would be fantastic. I don't see it happening. But whether that can carry the platform, the Wii U, just the popularity of Zelda. And for me, you know, look, if somebody bought me a Wii U and Zelda, I'd play it. But, you know, I'm not, if someone feels so generous. But but apart from that, no. And so with that, it sort of brings me to the point before I pass the mic over to you guys, is what other games am I looking forward to apart from NBA Live 14, NBA 2K14? And as I said in yesterday's podcast, Watch Dogs caught my eye, so I'll probably keep an eye open on that. Bethesda is not saying anything about Fallout. A few people are saying that there still could be an announcement regarding that. I'm not keeping holding my breath, not keeping my fingers crossed on it. But even so, we could be looking at a release date next year or even 2015. So, yeah, I have to admit there's – and, of course, no Pac-Man game. So I actually as much as I've sort of enjoyed seeing this or that, there hasn't been a game that's really, apart from perhaps Watch Dogs, that's really caught my interest and said, I actually, you know, really want to see what's going on here. So I was just wondering if there's any games that you guys have, apart from the basketball games, that have really captured your interest, not just yesterday, but today after day one. Left those?
I've said about the games I'm most excited for. I mean,
was there anything today that sort of stands?
Okay. I didn't see a lot of, you know, a lot of new stuff come up. I mean, I'm pretty much set with what I saw in Day Zero, and there wasn't enough, you know, there wasn't a very exciting presentation during Day One to sway me one way or another. I'm just really looking forward. I'm pretty much set in, you know, the games I handpicked yesterday in wanting to see more about those. I'm really excited about, for example, The Division and The Crew from Ubisoft. And then I'll be disappointed not to be able to play Forza 5 because I don't think I'm going to be investing in an Xbox One. But, you know, I mentioned the cool features that game has that I'm really looking forward to seeing in other games. So, yeah, no, nothing special coming out of day one as far as new games. More, you know, some interesting interviews and, you know, other news popping up that we've discussed in what piqued my interest from day one.
Sure. Ben?
I mean, Microsoft did show some interesting games. But I don't think there are enough to persuade me to buy that console.
Were there any games that you were interested in? Did anyone have a showing today that was a game that you were interested in actually had a presentation or information that appealed to you?
I was interested, like from the original PS4 announcement with the Drive Club game. That for me and the Crew one looked really interesting. I mean, I don't play a lot of driving games, but there was something about when they showed those that was like, okay, this could be something fun. And
yeah,
and
Drive Club had the day one showcase. There is a 3-minute gameplay video on YouTube now about it. And on the game trailer channel, I think it was on the game trailer's website. I don't know if it's on their YouTube as well. But it does look good. It does look good. Yeah. And considering that there's no news about whether Gran Turismo 6 is coming to the PS4, I think Gran Turismo's creators said that they're not looking into bringing the game to PS4 yet. So I guess, you know, Drive Club is going to be the direct competition to Forza 5. Yeah. I have to admit,
Drive Club looked more impressive to me than Forza did. Mm-hmm. I will say that. And again, the Crew one looked, again, more impressive. And they both have some similarities in them in a lot of ways. But I suppose the customization factor in the Crew was...
Yeah. Yeah, that was very good.
That's what sort of separated a little bit more in terms of difference in that.
But the Crew, I don't think, you know, I think that comparing the Crew to Drive Club and Forza 5 is comparing apples and oranges, because The Crew is a game with a different scope. It gives you the whole US. It's a massively multiplayer online game. It has a lot of customization. While while Drive Club and Forza 5 seem to be, you know, games on that follow the same recipe that, you know, the simulation driving games have had, which is, you know, specific trucks, specific cars, and a lot of them, simulation driving model, nothing too ridiculous, just, you know, focusing on the cars and the driving, while The Crew seems to be, you know, it seems to have that ridiculousness factor to it, as in, you know, you can tear the car apart and put it back together by selecting specific parts, so it can be a completely different thing, and you have takedown missions and stuff like that. So I think it's a different recipe, but it is a very interesting recipe. You know, how excited about I am about The Crew, but as far as, you know, comparing games that are going to be flagships as far as driving games go on the two next-gen consoles, I mean, I'm really interested in seeing how the Forza 5 and Drive Club fight is going to go, and I'm going to be really disappointed if Forza 5 flops because Xbox One flops. Because yeah. Forza is a very good game. I've tried it on the Xbox 360. I've played it for quite a while. I liked its driving model. I liked its car diversity. It's unfortunate because Forza 5 is going to be a good game, and it has this, you know, unique idea about having user-driven AI based on real user tendencies. So when you're playing single player, it's going to feel like multiplayer, and it has Xbox 360 is going to have the separate rumbling triggers on the controller. So it looks like so many good things came together for Forza 5. But it's on the Xbox One, and that's a big but. That's the unfortunate thing about this whole thing.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think it's funny how every controller I've tried on my friend's PS3 works, except the Xbox 360 controller that I have for PC. That's the only one that the PS3 was complaining about. This is an unknown device. Please disconnect. Which pissed me off to no end, because I'd really love, I'm going to be honest, I am, you know, leaning heavily, as in nearly falling into the pond for PS4, but I'd still use an Xbox One controller with it.
Okay.
And I won't be able to do that. I won't be able to do that unless someone comes up with something like a hacky bundle that persuades the PS4 to work with the Xbox One controller. Because, you know, triggers that have adjustable resistance, and I'm not yet sure whether that is a thing, but I've heard it and I'm really excited about it. And separately, and rubble separately from the controller seems so good for driving games. And, and for other games if you implement it properly. So I would be so excited to see that happen. But I guess if the PlayStation 4 controller doesn't have rumbling triggers and adjustable resistance, there won't be an API for it, so developers won't be able to utilize that. So the Xbox One controller would be pretty much useless. It's new features, at least. I don't know. Well, that's the kind of thing. There are things that I'm disappointed as far as the fact that I want the Xbox One doesn't look enticing. There's still things about its features, for example, its controller and some of its games that I'm pissed off that I'm going to be missing out. But you have to pick one, you know, unless you have the money to get them both. Oh well. But, you know, then again, you know, I don't get what Nintendo is trying to do. They came out, they had their mini press conference, and they said that Wii U games are coming, just not quite yet. Its major selling points were all with the 2014 release date. The Wii U is in so much trouble right now. I mean, Mario Mario Kart, I think, the first ever HD Mario Kart game is Spring 2014. Mega Man in Smash Bros. Is happening next year. The exclusive sequel to Bayonetta still exists, but it won't hit the Wii U until 2014. A new open-world adventure franchise called Dex from the creators of Xenosaga won't be in the Wii U until 2014. So they pretty much showcased games, and they said, you know, just stay with us for another year. There may be no games in 2013, but if you stick with us for another year, there are some great games coming next year. So
is the Wii U backwards compatible?
I think it can play some last gen or
There's that, I guess. So yeah. You've got some library of games to tide you over, and a few that came out last year, but.
And it has Wii TV.
Not a lot. If they're all talking about stick with us for 12 months, buy this console. It has no games. Buy this fantastic luxury car that doesn't run on any fuel that exists. I mean,
fuel coming 2014.
Yeah, fuel coming sometime in the future. In the meantime, you can push it. You can look at it.
Flintstone style.
You can polish it in the garage. You can show it off, but you know. You can't drive it anywhere.
Do you think Nintendo went too soon for their console release and not really think about it well enough?
I don't think they tried to do the same thing. I mean, the Wii, which was codenamed Revolution, was a revolution in many ways.
Yeah.
But the Wii U is just sort of more of the same. It's kind of like when they re-released the original Nintendo, the NES. The top down with the top loader, you know, all it was just a top loader. Although it did actually, it could play. It wasn't region locked. I think that was the only other thing when they redesigned that controller. Oh, and that console and the new controllers that were more like the Super Nintendo. But yeah, it's kind of like some of those consoles in the 90s, like the Atari Jaguar. It's sort of the mid ground between the next generation and not that much of a step up. So. Yeah, they're in a tough position.
Yeah, I think they're going to release another console probably by 2015, 2016. If
the Wii, it's not the Wii 3,
yeah. Or the Wii tried.
We tried. Yeah, I think you need to start creating that meme and get it out there.
And I just want to sort of. Mentioned. I got to see today the David Cage Quantum Break, or not Quantum Break. Now I did the opposite of what everyone else normally does. The Quantic Dream tech demo, the old man, the Dark Sorcerer tech demo, and the full 12-minute one. It was entertaining. It was actually quite funny. You sort of got a little bit of sense of humor from the beginning of it when they showed the little teaser of it yesterday. But the full 12-minute one is pretty funny, and it sort of takes the piss out of itself in a lot of ways. And the visuals in it, impressive as hell. Like, and it's from memory, I think it was running in real time, so it's in-engine based stuff, not pre-rendered as such. So, and yeah, just really impressive for what they were doing with that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it, with their games. Again, Naughty Dog, they're my favorite publisher and developer, so not publisher, but my favorite developer, so I'm waiting to see what their second team are doing. I think Sony didn't show all their top-tier games. They were probably... I honestly thought they were going to end it with Naughty Dog's title coming up, but I think... they're going to have a couple of part strategy. I think they did enough yesterday with the knockout punches there, and I think they're going to top it off with Naughty Dog, Quantic Dream, and a couple of others over Gamescom.
Quick question,
VGAs,
Ben. Quick question,
yeah?
Ben. After Assassin's Creed 4 live gameplay demo on the stage in the press conference and everything that happened with that, do you now understand why Microsoft chose to go the pre-recorded way when showcasing the Kinect 2.0?
Yeah, but...
I really feel bad about the guy that was playing the game live and it kept freezing on him. Because most probably it was just, you know, an experienced dev that, you know, just had prepared so well to play those demo stages in order not to, you know, in order to make the company proud, and you could see him make all the right moves, but the game just kept freezing on him, and it was so bad. So, you know, that's why when you show stuff, when you're not prepared to show stuff, you know, it usually ends up in disaster. Yeah. And it was embarrassing, and I feel bad for the guy. But, you know, another...
But we have to take into account, like, I mean, yeah, it was funny, but at the same time, I'm forgiving. You know, it's such early stage in development. You know, we've still got, like, 6 months or something for this game and console to come out. So, yeah, I mean, it was funny. But the other thing I found funny was when the Microsoft press conference, they had their sound issues with some of their games, and you're hearing fans going, "Microsoft sucks" or "Xbox sucks." But
during the Sony one
when that happened, everyone just sort of had a little laugh. So they were a bit more forgiving with the Sony little glitches and all that stuff, as opposed to when Microsoft had their little glitches. So I found that funny.
Okay.
Yeah. but I think it was all right in some degree because people were already disgruntled with Microsoft, so it was a little chance to sort of. Yep.
It was to be expected, and the funniest thing about the Microsoft Friends conference for me was that in the game trailers live stream, they had forgot a microphone on backstage. Someone had forgotten to turn off their microphone. So you kept hearing other people discussing over the trailers and the presentation and people laughing backstage. So, you know, it was that was the funniest moment for me.
It's kind of like the scene in The Naked Gun.
Naked Gun, yeah.
Leslie Nielsen goes backstage to the bathroom with his...
Yep. And how it builds up, sort of a couple of trickles, and builds up again. And everyone's like, "What the hell?" But yeah, that was funny.
Yeah,
but I wasn't too sure if that was something on my end when it fastened. I was like, "Is that? Am I got another browser up that's got another video streaming or something?" So at first, I was sort of checking, and I was like, "Crap!" But then I realized, "Oh wait, it's happening on the actual stage thing." Like, so yeah.
Yeah.
One other point that I wanted to sort of bring up from the Sony press conference, when I liked the way Sony showed the indie developers, like when they had that little segment, how it sort of showed individually, but all on the stage, end up being all on the stage at the one time. It sort of showed that they had an army of indie developers. So it was kind of like the scene in the Avengers movie. It's like, we have an army, we have a Hulk kind of thing. So that was the sort of little thing, a little comic relief that went in my head when they sort of showed that segment. But I think they were hitting their messages very strongly in that aspect of it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The big piece of not news from day one is that Rise, Son of Rome is still a bad game. One day later, and nobody's impressed. I'm sorry to the developers of Rise, but, you know, it's just as it is. It's just a quick time event game. So, again,
In 20 years' time, they can be featured on whatever streaming video site we have, whether it's YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all in one. You twit face, as Conan O'Brien put it. Whoever's doing angry video game nerd type reviews in 20 years down the line, they can. That'll be the first on the list. Remember this game we grew up with? Oh.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Do you see?
It'll be in technical demonstrations that game studios have not held, or how not to develop a game.
Yeah. Do you see the Kinect 2.0 ever just find the $100 more of the Xbox One?
No, next question.
Becoming, you know, so valuable to the experience that is, you know, being such a big part of games that they say, look, that's why we told you needed to have a Kinect 2.0?
I will say this. I thought about this, or this idea came to me the other day, is with the PlayStation camera and the Kinect 2.0. And I was thinking in regards to super game or superhero games. Every kid's had that fantasy of being a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
So that sense of an augmented reality game where you can sort of scan yourself in and you become that character.
Yeah.
I thought mm-hmm. that's a cool way of using the technology. But yeah. The game's got to work, obviously. But so that's one way I could see where it could work. But it wouldn't be enough in a lot of ways to sell the game in a lot of or sell the Kinect in a lot of ways. I know we want to try and wrap up, but I just wanted to sort of two little bits of news.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Sony have confirmed that the hard drives in the PS4 is replaceable.
Yeah, another piece of good news.
Yes. So, not only in the sense like if you wanted to put in a larger hard drive, but if the hard drive in the actual console stuffs up, it's easy to take out and put in. So, that's a great thing. Sony have said they're not implementing DRM and all that stuff. So that's a good thing. But they've said that
there's still going to be DRM.
Yeah, the publishers...
For example, just put the Blu-ray on your computer, make a copy, and give it to all your friends.
Yeah, but they've said, you know, the publishers themselves, like third party in particular, they can still implement that technology by that... by their choices and that, so
yeah, they can still do online tests. Yeah,
I only see probably about two or three publishers doing that. That's my thought. I think some might wait, see someone does it first, see if the rewards pay off. So
yeah, something like the Microsoft reveal and then the Sony reveal.
Yeah. Yeah. So test the waters with it, see if it's
So
yeah. So
if you want to upgrade your hard drive, there's a console for you.
Yes.
It's called the PC.
Yeah.
Oh, and Microsoft caters to that market too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those were two things that I wanted to sort of point out. So I just want to make sure we get that in before we wrap up.
What I got from that piece of news was that publishers won't be able to enforce DRM on single-player games. They won't be able to limit, you know, used game resale by any means, because there was this kind of doubt when Sony was saying that we're not enforcing any kind of DRM. We're leaving it up to the publishers. So people were afraid that if a publisher decided, you know, that maybe the Sony, that maybe the PS4 wouldn't block used games on its own, but maybe if a publisher wanted to do that, they'd be able to. But you know, from what I understand, Sony's policy is that you can't limit resales as far as disc games go, and as far as single player portion goes, but you can use whatever DRM you want to limit the limit the multiplayer portion. For example, you know, maybe you can still use online passes. So if I give the game to a friend, maybe the multiplayer portion will still be locked to my account, and they'll need to buy a new online pass code, you know, to enable the multiplayer features. But they'll still be able to play single player and, you know, enjoy the single-player portion without the need for a code or paying an additional fee if I've lent them the game or, you know, resold them. But then there is a catch to this, and it's not due to Sony. It's due to the trend that's been rising for single-player games to have a cloud requirement. And that's not tied to Microsoft's Xbox One console. Let's make this clear. If more games go the way of Diablo or SimCity 5 or any other always online game where the single player portion has to be connected online for all these additional features, and Microsoft is justifying that by saying that, you know, cloud computing is going to improve your gameplay experience, but, you know, publishers can justify the very same features on the PS4, like EA justified SimCity or Blizzard justified Diablo 3. You know, if games bring their single-player portion to the cloud or to an always-online connectivity mode, you're still going to be screwed.
Yeah.
So there's still, you know, we can't, you know, be too relaxed in letting the publishers go, because, you know, they'll be able to give us full control over, you know, the lending games to friends for the single player portion. If they still have to be always connected online and the game is tied to their account, even because the there is no single player portion per se, but the game is fully multiplayer, you're still going to be, you know, tied to whatever the publisher thinks is the DRM. So I have to wonder. I have to wonder. And this is the conspiracy theory guy in me coming out. Judging by the fact that Microsoft has gone to always online, are we going to see more single player games give up their official single player portion for an always online connected experience, just so publishers can have the same limitations on PS4 and Sony not getting any of the flack like they have on the Xbox One?
Well, I saw some comments, and they were actually in defense of the interview with Don Matrick that we were talking about earlier. People saying, one person in the comments said that single player gaming is dead. I don't agree with that. I mean, there's certainly a lot of great single player games out there. Assassin's Creed, Fallout, even the sports games we play have got really in-depth single player modes. So, you know, I guess if you're the type of person that loves playing the online first-person shooters, then you may think that on single player gaming is dead, but I still feel it's pretty much alive and well. So
yeah. And I think with this iteration of hardware too, we're going to see smarter AI that would make the single player games far more interesting. And
yeah, if they decide wouldn't you say we have the hardware to have the AI simulate our neighbors in SimCity and simulate a global market?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say we could have AI that would be able to simulate full living worlds with, you know, teammates and enemies in games like the massively multiplayer online games?
Well, you know, we've got the technology and the ability to make really good movies without 3D, but they still make 3D movies because it's a fun gimmick, isn't it? When we've got I think it's a case of sometimes we've got the technology and the concept in mind, so let's do it. And you know, even if we don't have to, even if there is an alternative, because gimmicks are fun. So maybe it's that. Maybe this is the whole concept is just the new 3D movies in terms of games. And of course, we've got 3D games as well. But that's one way of looking at it, I guess.
Have any of you played any games in 3D?
No.
Nope.
I don't know. I don't have the equipment to do so.
Okay. If John manages to come on the podcast anytime soon, you know, you could ask him. He has a 3D TV and he got it specifically to enjoy some games in 3D, so he will be able to, you know, chime in with his thoughts on 3D gaming so far.
I've played a little bit. Like, I've played Uncharted 3 in 3D and Assassin's Creed 3. Was 2K12 in 3D, or was that a little?
Yeah, I think
they released a free update for it. Yeah.
Okay. Is 2K13 3D?
It wasn't really promoted. Probably.
Yeah, it wasn't promoted, but I think that it's still one of the games that just supports 3D vision if you have an NVIDIA card.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure.
To be honest with you.
Okay, I might try and look in some of the settings and that on the PS3 version.
We can talk, more about it.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
So any final thoughts on today, or that's about it, is it?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Oh, well then, I guess the time has come to wrap up what has turned out to be longer than we expected, but still, for us, a short episode. So thank you for everyone for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this one. And if you haven't listened to part one, we encourage you to go back and listen to it, where we react to all the usual things we talk about around the NLSC, that being basketball video games. But there were a couple of snippets to discuss today.
Discuss the NBA finals, and in case somebody doesn't know by the time they listen to this,
I was going to say that Sony continues to do to Microsoft what the Spurs did to the Heat in Game 3 of the...
That's cutting deep.
And for that matter, what the Heat did to the Spurs in Game 2,
yep.
Which I'm just going to gloss right over now. certainly that's those finals heating up, no pun intended, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And we'll be watching and I'm sure giving our opinions in between all the video game talk. But while I do have everyone's attention, remember to keep it locked, NBA-live.com, the NLSC for all the news that we'll be reporting and from E3 and otherwise, and of course the file editions from our community, all the wonderful stuff that we do that you should know about, and if not, check it all out. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Blueberry, and of course follow us on Twitter at the NLSC, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. So that's going to wrap it up for today. Join us again tomorrow for day two of our coverage. Well, day three of our coverage, day two officially of E3. I'm Andrew.
I'm Leftos, and let's do away with Always Online Games.
Here.
And I'm Arcane, and I stayed awake.
Yes!
See you tomorrow, guys.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah.